is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the Country Hour. The Tanami region is having a big wet season, which is great for local cattle producers, although the damage caused to a lot of the roads out that way is getting a number of them nervous.
Next couple of months, upcoming mustering season and that, we'll need the roads up to spec, otherwise truckies won't want to cart our cattle out to market.
Also today, the Amateur Fishermen's Association is renewing calls for a ban on commercial crabbing in Shoal Bay near Darwin.
It's a major cause for concern. It's an area that we currently have an application for resource sharing to have Shoal Bay allocated for recreational crabbing, and it's the most important area for recreational crabbing in the Northern Territory.
And before 1:30 today, you'll be learning about the fate of a bullock named Russell. Russell is a pet bullock. He weighs more than 1,100 kilos, and his owners have decided to sell him. So Russell has rocked up to the local sale yards in Narra Court. He's raising plenty of eyebrows. What will happen to Russell? You'll find out before the end of the Country Hour. We're broadcasting across the territory on the ABC. You can catch us on the television via Channel 25. And g'day to those listening via the podcast. Now, first up today, let's talk about the live cattle trade out of Darwin. Because at the moment, finding enough cattle to fill boats to Indonesia is proving a real challenge. And because supply is so tight, the price is going up. Feeder steers have been fetching around $4.10 a kilo. But the Country Hour is aware of at least one agent who is locking in cattle at $4.30 a kilogram. These are record prices. I had a chat to agent Scott Riggs, who is from Top End Livestock, based in Katherine, and started by asking him about just how hard it is to find cattle right now for the boats.
At the end of the day, we're in the peak of the wet season, and it's been a wet season we haven't had for some time, Matt. So, look, my understanding is there's been rainfall all over the Northern Territory, right through the Kimberleys, down to Broome and into that Gascoyne and Pilbara region. So there's been a lot of rainfall around, which has been hard for exporters to secure cattle that are guaranteed. So the clients that have got cattle around the bitumen up in the Top End, mainly we've secured good deals, and the demand's still fairly high.
How far are you casting the net to find cattle to put on boats out of Darwin?
We mainly procure cattle from the Top End of Darwin, so that Douglas Daly region. Floodplains are all sort of done now, done and dusted. We've done all the floodplain work in December this year, probably a month earlier than normal due to the big wet. Down to Douglas Daly, down to Merrifield Station, Colin down at Merrifield in the feedlot's been in the box seat there with cattle locked up on feed at the bitumen. And then once again throughout the Douglas Daly, as I said.
How much money is on offer at the moment?
There's good money being offered, and naturally the games are being played. There was only one or two exporters that were looking for cattle for supply of late February. Now there appears to be four or five out there in the market. So the price is high. You know, steers were getting offered at $4.10 and $3.90 on heifers. Well, we didn't secure any of that money. We locked our cattle up at anywhere between $4.20. $25 and $4.30. The peak of them, the $4.30, we got contract on feeder steers out to about 400 kilos, Matt. So $4.30 is the peak of our market that we're operating at the end of sort of that 20th, 22nd of February, and heifers down to $4. Also putting some crossbred cattle or some secondary type cattle on that same delivery at less 20 cents, so back to $4.10. So you know, what's been paid around that $4.10, we've been sort of 10, 15, 20 cents above that job, which is really good for our clients and our business.
I'm just reaching for my calculator, Scott. Did you say up to four, you'd lock in 400 kilo steers at $4.30 a kilo?
Basically, we've got the spec is, you know, you can go down to, say, as light as 260 kilo.
Yes.
We like to operate around that 300 to 400 kilo. So in that spec, you know, we could put a 400 kilo steer on, and we do have contracts in place with a couple of vendors at $4.30. So they're in their right to put an animal on of that. But, you know, probably going to average around 350 kilo at the end of the day, Matt, on feeder steers. Yeah, mate.
Yeah, and 350 kilo feeder steers at $4.30. I mean, we're talking over $1,500 an animal. The live export trade's never seen this before, has it?
No, we haven't. It is top of the tree money. There's no doubt about that, Matt. But you've also got to look at what the little cattle are making in the eastern states, down in New South Wales, etc. You know, there's big reports of $5 or $6 a kilo for them real little blowaway cattle to put into paddocks. And you know, 180 kilo animal is probably going to cost you $1,200 or $1,300 to put into a paddock down south at the moment. So, look, at the end of the day, it's right up there. Yes, and the big thing is with live export, we don't have a dentition problem at this stage. You know, the producers in the north, we don't have to mow their cattle, so it's full road train lots at the agreed rate. And yeah, it is good returns, $1,500. It's never been seen before. So I'm very happy with what they're getting rewarded at the moment.
How long can these sort of prices last, do you think?
That's always the crystal ball question, Matt, you ask every time. This time of the year, it's very common to be right up there in the stirrups this time of the year. You know, right through from sort of late November, December, there's a gradual increase out to sort of January, February. I've always had a personal opinion was about March 17 was in my head every year. You can only go by demand, the supply, obviously. Wet season tends to create a high price and obviously the demand at the moment. But one thing to think about and consider, and it's high on the cards, is Ramadan and the festivities of Lebaran over in Indonesia. You'll find April the 1st, April 1 of this year is the start of Ramadan, and May 1 will be the slaughter moving into Lebaran for their festivities in the month of May.
So that's what those feedlots, what they want the cattle now so they can put a bit of extra weight on and then cash in on that Ramadan period.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, they've got to have the supply chain in their feedlots locked up. Let's just say by early March at the very latest, late February preferable. If those feedlotters, importers, put 70, 80, 90 days on their animals where they get them up to that slaughter weight that's required for May 1st, Lebaran festivities. So I would say if you did your calculations, end of February, that's why there's big demand at the moment. To answer your question, how far is it going to go and how long is it going to hang around for? I would say the people that get their cattle in between now and sort of mid-March and grab that opportunity, it's very good money. They all appreciate that. I think these producers appreciate $4 and beyond. So at the end of the day, it's very good money. But there could be a correction in the market, say March, and it'll only be due to feedlots will be full, and they'll be concentrating on getting their cattle fat for Ramadan and Lebaran. And normal standoff, they might sit down for a month and have a look at Australian costs and whatnot, cost of the commodity, get it over there, and make us jerk it back for 50, 40 cents. Who knows, Matt, but I think we're at the end of the line for the month of February anyway. Mm.
We keep hearing reports at the Indonesian end that they're doing it very tough under these prices.
They are doing it tough. I mean, there is reports, I've only got it third hand, but the police are governing the wet market price over there at the moment. My understanding, they've capped the wet market at about 45,000 rupiah per kilo. If there's butchers exceeding that price, well, they're heavily penalised or fined. So they're trying to keep that price reasonable for, you know, the end user, the consumers on the street, make it affordable. 45,000 rupiah is about run-of-the-mill price at the meatworks, or on the wet market, I should say. So they're trying to cap that. So there's been a couple of complications, not with all feedlots or importers, but there has been concern over that, to be honest, Matt. So, yeah, the price is high, mate, and, you know, the economy over there. So it might flatline a little bit.
Are there many shipments to Vietnam leaving Darwin at the moment?
There's a couple of inquests now for supply. At the end of the day, they've been coming out of Townsville. I know the boys in Townsville have been struggling to fill it, but they happen to at high prices, coming out of feedlots, I'm assuming, for heavy bulls and bullocks. But, you know, we're in the wet season. We're in the north. There's not too many bullocks and bulls off slaughter capability around the top end of Darwin and Northern Territory, not at this particular month. Not till first round. I wouldn't think we'd see too many bullocks or bulls until probably April at this stage of decent numbers, Matt.
In terms of the year ahead, how are you feeling about the supply of cattle?
Oh, at the end of the day, they can only breed as much as they can breed, mate. And look, it's been a magnificent year right throughout the top end or the northern Australia right across the whole seaboard. So producers should be getting back on their feet and recouping and retaining a lot of their joiner heifers. And over the next couple of years, we see that herd increase, I've got no doubt, just from feed, the feed source it's about. Obviously creates healthy animals, and so I'd say it's going to grow over the next couple of years. The actual availability of cattle, where we're competing against Queensland and northern parts of South Australia, New South Wales, that are buying background cattle to turn them into bullocks. So live export, they'll have their work cut out in supplying. The demand will always be there, but you really it's month by month scenario, really, Matt.
Thanks for your time on the Country Hour today.
No problem, Matt.
That is Scott Riggs, who is from Top End Livestock based in Katherine. And you heard right, some feeder steers in the Northern Territory currently getting $4.30 a kilo. Unheard of money. Unbelievable. It was about August last year that similar types of animals were getting $2.60 a kilo. Now at $4.30, if I'm using my calculator correctly, that's a 65% increase on what we saw happening just back in August. Whew! If you've got cattle, if you've got grass and you're close to the bitumen, happy, happy days. Spare a thought, though, for those who need to buy.
G'day, this is Dan Richards from Humpty Doo Barramundi. When I can, I like to tune in to the NT Country Hour.
It is 18 to 1. The Amateur Fishermen's Association of the Territory has written to the Minister for Industry requesting a ban on commercial mud crabbing in Shoal Bay near Darwin. AFANT says its request was triggered by a commercial mud crabber that has just started operating in Shoal Bay, which is legal, but it's the first time there's been any commercial activity in that area since 2014. And according to AFANT's Chief Executive, David Chiravalo, it'll put unnecessary pressure on that fishery. He spoke exclusively about this issue with the ABC's Tales from the Tinny. Let's have a listen.
We received information that a commercial crabber began to operate their pots in Shoal Bay on Monday or Tuesday. And that's actually the first time that that's happened since 2014. So it's a major cause for concern. It's an area that we currently have an application for resource sharing to have Shoal Bay allocated for recreational crabbing. And it's the most important area for recreational crabbing in the Northern Territory.
So the last commercial, David, was in there in 2014. Why has this happened just now? Can you go over what the situation has been in the interim that's basically meant it's been commercial free in Shoal Bay?
Shoal Bay is an area of expanding recreational fishing, or recreational crabbing especially. So we've seen the rec catch go from 2009 around 6 tonnes up to close to 19 tonnes in 2014. And at the same time, the commercial fishery is very much concentrated in the Gulf of Carpentaria and over to Bino and around to the West Coast. What we've had is a situation where there's been a lot of pressure to ensure that there isn't commercial crabbing in Shoal Bay, but there's a formal process that you have to go through to get a resource allocation. And we pulled the trigger on that back in 2017-18. And through that process, it's got to the point where it's sitting on the minister's desk. It's been sitting there, different ministers, mind you, but it's been sitting on a fisheries minister's desk since August of 2018. And the next step resides with the minister.
So just to clarify, in Fisho's language, David, it's currently legal, to net commercially for mud crab in Shoal Bay. You've applied for Shoal Bay to be banned for commercial crabbing a number of years ago. While that decision has been made, which is clearly taking a long time, hasn't there been a memorandum of understanding, like a gentleman's agreement, that commercial crabbers wouldn't go into Shoal Bay?
Yeah, that's right. So AFANT put in a formal application to the Mud Crab Fishery Advisory Committee. And during that time, while that was progressing and while there was an establishment of new rules for the fishery, we had an MOU with the Seafood Council in place. That expired at the end of 2018. And that expired in the context of the Mud Crab Advisory Committee not being able to reach consensus on our proposal and it then residing with the minister. I guess from our perspective, it was pretty clear that there were at least some people in the mud crab fishery, commercial fishery, that had designed or wanted to go fishing in Shoal Bay. And so having an MOU wasn't the protection that we needed. What we need is a formal resource allocation decision to be made.
So looking at the macro picture, David, I mean, there's some pretty bountiful crab grounds right across the Northern Territory in the top end. Do commercials really need Shoal Bay? Like, what do you think's driving this?
Do Reco's really need it exclusively? Why can't it be shared?
I'm going to answer no and yes to those questions. The commercial sector accounts for 88% of the crab take in the Northern Territory historically, and the rec sector only 6%. In the last 10 years, only 20 kilos of crabs have been caught commercially out of Shoal Bay. So it's effectively been recreational only for the past decade. And in 2014, which is the year that we have the most up-to-date figures for Shoal Bay, 19,000 kilos were caught by recreational fishers. And obviously, we've always error bars on those statistics. But, you know, a stark contrast in terms of it's critically important to recreational fishing, and it's not important at all to the commercial sector as a whole. You know, in fact, you'd have to imagine that if there was a resource allocation, as we are certainly calling for, and we've called upon the minister to implement immediately, there'd be very little claim for any compensation or adjustment because there just hasn't been historical commercial fishing there.
That's AFANT Chief Executive David Chirivalo speaking with Andy and Tim from Tales from the Tinny. Here at the Country Hour, we have contacted the NT Seafood Council for comment. Haven't heard back yet. And I am sure you'll be hearing more about this issue on Tales from the Tinny, 5:30 this Friday, or you can catch them via the podcast.
Gardening Australia is back on ABC TV and on iView.
Walking through your garden, it feels like a bit of a journey.
And Costa and the team are back with a jaw-dropping designer garden.
I have no doubt you managed to keep busy without me.
Orchestral orchids and city-loving bees.
They're on tops of shopping centres, they're on tops of corporate offices.
It's a spectacular time.
Gardening Australia returns Friday 7:30pm on ABC TV and streaming on iView.
It is 12 to 1 here on the Country Hour. If you're looking for a job in 2021, what's your thoughts about getting a gig in the Northern Territory's cattle industry? Got some tips for you next on how to become a ringer from the top end.
And nobody does the job better than a ringer from the top end. That's right.
Yes, being a ringer from the top end, the job immortalised in song by Slim Dusty. And for decades, it's been a job that has lured a lot of young people to the bush. Well, cattle stations across the territory are starting to look for people ahead of the 2021 muster. Hugo Rickard-Bell had a chat with Sarah Cook, who's the manager of Aileron Station, and asked her about what she looks for when sifting through the pile of CVs that come across her desk every year.
Applications dribble throughout the year. We don't usually advertise, haven't needed to for station hands, but we are this year. We're going to advertise. We've just decided we're going to advertise for a couple of station hands because we've had some changes on property. when we do advertise, we look for traits or qualities of new staff rather than skills. So we don't mind inexperienced people, and actually we prefer it because we prefer to build their skills and knowledge around our values and our expectations.
So say you've got 10 application and CVs in front of you. How do you narrow it down to your, you know, two or three strong stock camp that you need?
We're just looking for people who have got some solid references, really, and it doesn't matter so much whether they've been in a job for a long time. I guess that depends a lot on their age as well, but we like to see people having a crack, and we like to see that their references give them strong recommendations. So it doesn't really matter which background they come from or what sort of work they've done in the past. In some cases, it's a bit of a bonus, but as long as they have qualities that sort of stand out, we like people who have done been active in their community, maybe they've done some extra courses or leadership kind of things, or maybe they've worked in McDonald's for 6 years during their high school years. I mean, that's a great quality.
When it comes to first-year ringers, which make up quite a lot of the stock camps in the north and the central Australia, what do you look for in a first-year ringer?
Well, we want them to get out of bed every time. We want them to work as part of the team. They've got to be able to talk about stuff, the good, the bad and the ugly. We want them to tell us if something goes wrong, be the eyes and ears on the ground, and be trustworthy. So you've got to be able to give them an instruction or ask them to do something and without being supervised, know that they'll follow through. And my husband often says, you know, you burn me once and I start losing trust in you, we may as well call it quits on the relationship, because if we've got no foundation to build on in that respect, we've got nowhere to go with you.
And so what are some of the do's and don'ts for first years out there that might be listening in and needing some tips?
Don't lie, because we had a story once when Craig asked one of the jackaroos to go and check a fence, and he came back and Craig said, "Oh, you checked that fence?" And he said, yeah, I'll check the fence anyway. So he was quite new, and Craig thought, just something doesn't feel right. So he went down there, and there's this fella's taken the motorbike down and found a good tree and had a sleep, and got on the motorbike and came back, and of course he hadn't checked the fence. So that was the end of his time with us. So don't lie.
And no sleeping on the job by the sounds either.
Well, you know, you can't pull the wool over your managers or head stockman's eyes, because they do know what's going on. That's their job.
No, they've got eyes everywhere, haven't they? And
they have.
Sarah, I understand you guys are taking part in the Real Jobs program. Are you looking forward to seeing, you know, the calibre of ringer coming out of there?
Yep. And we're not looking necessarily as to whether they pass their training with flying colours. We're just going back to those qualities again: the honesty, reliability, physically motivated, trustworthy, and able to communicate. So yeah, it doesn't matter who you are. If you have those skills, we're happy to have you here. Qualities, we're happy to have you here.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sarah, just before we go, have you got any classic first year ringer stuff up stories for us?
Yeah, so one of my favourites is when the ringer was asked to hook the trailer up, and he reversed the Toyota up to the wrong end of the trailer and couldn't figure out what to do next.
Oh, no.
But I did have an engineering student who couldn't work out how to turn the hose on using the hose nozzle. He was really upset when I showed him, you just twist that nozzle on the end, that's when the water comes out. But mostly we like to give everybody the opportunity to make a couple of mistakes, because it does take them a while to settle into the environment. We try not to judge too much in the early stages.
Sarah Cook from Aileron Station. With some good tips there for those looking to get into the cattle industry. She was speaking there to Hugo Rickard-Bell.
Hello, my name's Sam Mudrin. I'm from Goombalanya Meats. And you're listening to The Country Hour on the ABC.
How about this? A pet bullock that weighed more than 1,100 kilos has raised plenty of eyebrows this week when it rocked up to the local sale yards. The 8-year-old bullock named Russell He was sold at Narra Court. The selling agent, Brendan Fitzgerald, says Russell is the heaviest bullock that he's ever seen. What happened to Russell? Let's find out.
He outgrew his little place up at Border Town. The owner, Tracy Madden, then decided to sell it down in Narra Court at the normal Tuesday market. He outgrew the little block, of course, and that was the reason for selling. She shared it on Facebook and got quite a lot of inquiries for the bullock to be bought to go on as a pet. He weighed 1,110 kilos.
Wow.
And he made 220 cents a kilo. And he's gone to a good home up in the Riverland. So, yes.
220 cents a kilo. How much did that actually end up being?
$2,442.
That's not bad.
No.
That's not bad at all.
It's good. And great to see him go to a new home. Actually, the new owner up in the Riverland has a animal safe shelter for animals. And she's got actually a 25-year-old cow there that's going to be its mate while it's up there. So
Russell's going to live a good long life.
He's going to live a good long life, and Tracy has sent up the recipe of the ration that he was being fed, so he'll go on to that still, and she's going to take photos and send it down to a previous owner just to let her know how he's going up there.
So, all in all,
at the end of a good story, yeah.
What was he being fed? How did he get to be so big?
Oh, I think they get looked after. They get fed over the fence, and I think it can be fruit and it can be a good grain ration as well. They get pretty spoiled. So I think young Morgan, the son, he would go out and feed it apples and whatever, and he'd sit on its back and walk underneath it and around it. It was a great mate of his too. So for a little kid of, I suppose, 6 or 7 years old, it's a big pet, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think the farmers might be wanting to know, what breed is he?
He's a straight Friesian, and they can grow quite big, so they can. A good sale and well supported, and it was nice to see animals like that that start off as a pet and get to an age, go to a nice home again. It was good.
There you go. A happy ending for Russell the Bullock. That was agent Brendan Fitzgerald speaking there to Bridget Herman. Have we got a picture yet of Russell, Dan, to share on the old Facebook page? 1,110 kilos is what Russell weighed. Yeah, and kind of nice that he's been bought to live out his days in a paddock somewhere there in SA. Russell. Yeah, let's track down a picture of Russell. Look at the time. We've got to go to the newsroom, but I'll catch you back here for more Country Hour in 5 minutes.
G'day, it's Will Evans here from the Northern Territory Livestock Exporters Association, and you're listening to the Northern Territory Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. Hey, before 1:30, heading out to the Tenami, which is having a fantastic wet season, plenty of green grass, but the state of some of the roads out that way has got local cattle producers nervous.
Next couple of months, upcoming mustering season and that, we'll need the roads up to spec, otherwise truckies won't want to cart our cattle out to market.
That's coming up. Let's go to the Weather Bureau now. Sally Cutter, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
The tropical low that was tracking across the Northern Territory, where is it now?
It's over the Kimberley at the moment, so the southern central parts of the Kimberley. It's going to progress southwards and then come back across that through the just to the south of the Lasseter district, but certainly we should see that those rainfall totals or some pretty good rainfall totals down through that southwest Lasseter district over the next couple of days.
How much rainfall could that region expect?
Well, if you're right down on the border, you could be sort of getting sort of 30 or 40 millimetres. So they're probably going to be mainly out of storms. So at this stage, we'll probably put out some severe thunderstorm warnings if we see them coming through for heavy rainfall.
Yep.
But yeah, once you get sort of towards Yulara, sort of Curtin Springs way, you might be looking more sort of around that sort of 20, 30 mil mark. But so down most of the, and that's for tomorrow, and then as we go into, so that's sort of going to persist as we go into Friday before clearing off on Saturday.
Rightio. And how,
or rather easing.
And how far east could that moisture extend?
Well, we've got that tropical moisture right through the territory at the moment. It's really just the southeast of the Simpson District that's not seeing much. We're starting to see some storms popping up around Alice Springs at the moment. So there's that. What we've got is that tropical air right through the territory. You add heat, which you've got, so it's 36.6 degrees at Alice Springs, 35.9 at Yulara. So you add heat and we're going to start getting the storms bubble. You may not actually experience it, but you may see it. So it's just the nature of those showers and storms with the concentration along the trough, which is what this low is going to run down, and then that trough is going to push through and push northwards and contract those showers and storms north again.
Okay. And whilst all this is going on, what is the forecast for, you know, the top end and out in the Gulf Country?
Okay, top end easing off for a couple of days. Then we're getting the troughs trying to redevelop over the north as we go into the weekend. And so that's going to see an increase in activity again, particularly around the Arnhem District. So it's going to initially start in the east, and then the trough builds back towards the west over the top end, and the low may run down it, but it's a fairly weak system at the moment. So as far as wind, we're not too concerned about it. It's just going to enhance the rain and showers and storms over the top end.
Okay, then. Anything else we need to be aware of? I know we were swamped in warnings yesterday, but that's sort of petered out, hasn't it?
Yeah, we finalised the flood warning for the Victoria River. So everything's quiet and down, but as I said, tomorrow we are expecting the rain to start down in that southwest corner and the potential for some heavy storms. If you're in the northern parts of the territory, you wouldn't say the totals were very large, but for central Australia, we are expecting those heavy falls through that southwest Lasser district.
Mm. And yeah, this is a region that's been missing out on a lot of the action, so it'd be great for places like Curtin Springs and that to get some good rain. Just before I let you go, the 24-hour period to 9 o'clock this morning. What were some of the best figures, Sally?
Okay, the first place goes to Bradshaw Training Area with 61 millimetres. Port Keats came in with 49 millimetres. Arden Soak, which is on the Woodruff River, he had 33.5, and Central Island 20. So there's been some good falls. Murray Vale, 17.2, Fish River, 15.4, Territory Grape, 14 millimetres. So even parts of Central Australia aren't missing out totally. So it's just whether you need to get them over the rain gauge. That's the trick to actually appear on this list.
Yep. And I'll share this with you. That tropical low dumped a lot of water in the catchment area of Lake Argyle. Yep. They're on the WANT border. Just looking at the stats there for Argyle, it's currently sitting at 43%. Before Christmas, it had dipped to below 30% capacity.
Ooh.
How's this? It's hard to wrap your head around, really, because Argyle's so big, Sally. But in the last 14 days, that lake, that dam, has seen an extra 1,000 gigalitres flow into it.
Yeah,
1,000 gigs in a fortnight has gone
That's
into
amazing.
Argyle.
I know. When it first filled up, it filled up really, really quickly as well. So
I don't know how true it is. I always got told there's a few bulldozers and whatnot sitting at the bottom because it all happened too quickly, or they just couldn't be arse moving it. I'm not too sure, but that's what I was always told.
Yeah, I think one of my neighbours at one stage was teaching out there. They were actually going out in the boats and rescuing the animals off the islands.
Ah, yes.
So quickly.
The fellow's name escaped. Harry Butler, was it? Famous for, in the early 70s, went out there rescuing all the animals before the lake filled. Yep.
Yep.
I think they made a doco about that. Yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's one of those ones that if you get rain in the right spot, it's going to fill.
Yeah. 1,000 gigalitres in a fortnight. God. Huge. Have a lovely afternoon, Sally.
Will do. Thanks.
G'day, it's Mick Jacoby here from NT Hayseed and Grain. I'm just gearing up to grow some hemp in the Douglas Daily, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
Well, after an exceptionally wet couple of months across the Tanami, cattle stations in that region find themselves in a bit of a catch-22. in that their country is green, there's plenty of grass, dams are full, cattle are fat, but the damage to the Tanami Road is pretty extreme. Cattle producers are now worried that if the road doesn't get a quick fix, then trucks won't be able to get in and cart their cattle to markets. Hugo Rickard-Bell had a chat to Robert Martin, who's from Mount Denison Station. He fears they might have to set their mustering back by a couple of months until the Tanami is repaired.
Yes, we had a decent bit of rain through halfway through December up until, and then it kept going on till the end of January. And just because there's such large quantities in short amount of time, it just eroded the roads and that, and just put a stop to pretty much all traffic that isn't four-wheel drives.
Robert, without the traffic, how's Mount Denison felt the strain of that road not being up to scratch?
At the moment, it hasn't affected us too much. Like, can't get stuff out if you need a load of hay or something like that at the moment, but we're fortunate enough to not need it because of all our lush green grass. Well, the next couple of months, upcoming mustering season and that, we'll need the roads up to spec, otherwise truckies won't want to cart our cattle out to market.
And so what happens if, how are you going to come up against that? If the road, nothing has been done with that road, by the time it's time for mustering, how are you going to get around that?
We won't be able to, because if we can't get the trucks down it, we can't move our cattle.
So the selling of cattle in Central Australia is pretty inconsistent. By putting your mustering back, what does that do to your product?
Well, it means we've got extra cattle on hand when we've got all the feed coming up. And so we're going to have the extra cattle that we would normally truck hanging around on the station eating the feed, which should be lasting us through till the next wet.
How much feed can you lose out of a delayed trucking like that, you know, roughly?
Oh, good couple of hundred head of cattle that you'd normally truck and they're sitting there for an extra couple of months. You'll notice the differences pretty quickly.
And has this problem been, you know, around before? Have you had a lot of this sort of trouble?
In the past, we've had it where we couldn't get trucks in because the roads were just too wet, but we haven't had it where you just can't get anything down the road because the road isn't there anymore.
So can you describe to me what that might look like? What do you mean by the road's just not there?
2 to 3 foot drops in the middle of the road, and they're all just part of the creek now. It's not actually a road.
Has there been any talk about are people coming out to fix that road?
We had our access road between Yundamu and the homestead that got graded a couple of weeks ago. But then 2 days after that, we had another 3 inches of rain on it. So it's back to how it was before it was graded.
And is that your only access point for trucks through that road?
That's one of our main access points, but we do have another one which comes in from the Stuart Highway. But that road's been shut for the past month and a half, so we don't even know what the rest of it's like.
And have you heard from anyone yet whether they are going to come out? And
not at the moment.
So how many other places are affected by this road? Is it just you guys?
We've got our neighbour to the east of us, and then there's another station between them and the Stuart Highway. And I'm not sure what their road's like, but I can imagine it'd be pretty much the same with ours.
So I guess we're talking, you know, if you add that up, what that could be almost over a couple of thousand head sort of not going to market. Would that make quite a dent into, you know, income and that sort of stuff?
For us, it definitely would, just from not being able to truck them when they're in their prime position.
So, Robert, who do you have to talk to get someone to come out and fix those roads so you can take advantage of your cattle being in their prime, especially while these prices are doing so well at the moment?
We've talked to the roads department a little bit, but they're still trying to find time to come out and inspect them to see what work needs doing. So it'll probably be a couple of months yet.
So at this stage, does it definitely look like your mustering will probably get set back?
At this stage?
Yep.
Well, it just means everything gets pushed back a month or 2 months. So everything's just a bit more delayed.
Other than just trucking cattle, how else is this road sort of getting in the way of your stuff?
Well, it's stopping us from doing general duties around the station. Half of our bores are along this road, so if you need to take a truck out there with fencing material or a new trough or something like that, we can't actually do that.
And if anything did go seriously wrong where you needed a truck out there, that's just not happening?
Yeah, not anytime soon.
That's Robert Martin of Mount Denison Station sharing some of his concerns about the current state of the mighty Tanami. Sounds pretty rough out there. It is 17 past 1 on the Country Hour. Because of all this wet weather, There's quite a few roads that are looking a bit rough and looking a bit closed. I'm joined by Dan Fitzgerald. Dan, what are some of the main tracks that find themselves underwater or in trouble as we go to air this afternoon?
The Roper Highway, Matt, is closed between the Moroke Road intersection and the Hodgson Downs Road. There were some great pics up on the ABC Darwin Facebook page yesterday. Water just flowing all over the roads and Strangways crossing underwater. So, yeah, plenty of water out in the Roper region.
I noticed that Facebook post mostly been filled up with fishos going, you beauty.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, continue.
Good
sorry.
Conditions there. Also closed is the big Cannon Highway at the Dashwood Crossing. That's just next to Victoria River Down Station. There's flooding through there. The Barclay Stock Group between the Stuart Highway and the Tablelands Highway is closed. The Calvert Road is closed and the Nathan River Road is closed between Ryan's Bend Road and the Roper Highway. So, yeah, a lot of roads in the top end. And for those in Katherine, I know at this time of year when I was living there, the height of the river is always something people are keen to know.
Yes.
9.75 metres and steady at the moment.
And on the Katherine River, you have just alerted me to just a beautiful thing that can be found on the internet.
Yeah, courtesy of the Katherine Town Council, they've got a little website. If you just search in your engine, search engine for Katherine River Cam, there is a camera that has a live feed almost of the Katherine River and the marker on the bridge.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, one of the great pastimes in Katherine during the wet season is for people just to go for a drive over the Stuart Highway Bridge, take a look at how the river is, do a U-turn, and just come back into town.
So people can find this by typing in Katherine Town Council River Cam. And bam, there it is.
A live shot of the Katherine River.
The mighty Katherine River sitting just below 10 metres there at the bridge in town. That's a beautiful thing. Thank you very much for the tip, Dan Fitzgerald. Earlier on in the Country Hour, we were talking about commercial crabbing in Shoal Bay. AFANT has renewed its calls for a ban on that commercial activity, and the CLP has just put out a press release regarding this story today on the Country Hour. Shadow Minister for Recreational Fishing, Jared Maley, calling on the Gunner government to take immediate action, he says, and impose an interim ban on commercial crabbing in Shoal Bay to safeguard recreational fishing. I'm sure you're going to hear more about this story throughout the afternoon on the ABC. It's 22 past one. You are tuned into the Country Hour. Now, one of the first major bull sales of the year has wrapped up in Charters Towers over in Queensland. It's called the Big Country Brahman Sale this year. 289 bulls sold, the top price, $130,000. Country House Tom Major had a chat to agents Troy Trevor and Sean Flanagan, who ran the sale for the first time this year. Troy says there were bids coming in from right across the north.
You know, a fair bit of online stuff through the Elite system. We had people as far as Grafton here over the last couple of days, Katherine, Darwin and the Northern Territory. So that was as far and wide as we went, so and everywhere in between.
Sean, some of the figures from this year's sale, some of the results, 100% clearance, that's got to be a real bonus.
Yeah, no, certainly we, 100% clearance. We aim for that for all our bull sales and have been getting that for quite a while. We like to try to know that we're what we're walking into. But tremendous result. So the total bulls was 289 for an average of 15,638. On top of that, we had our heifers, the 70 stud bell heifers, gross 555,000, average $7,930. And the 38 Lanes Creek ladies heifers, grossed 185,000 for an average of $4,870. 397 lots in total for a gross of $5,259,500 and average $13,250.
That top grey Brahman bull today, purchased, I believe, by Kenilworth Brahmins, what was it about him that made him particularly attractive to bidders?
Look, he was a nice bull, exceptionally quiet. He was actually a homozygous polled, double P polled head, but it was actually quite an enjoyable thing with that bull. He was offered by Gary and Katrina Lynch from Gracemere Brahmins, first-time vendors in the sale, to be purchased by Calvin and Maloney, who were actually in the first sale of Big Country when it started.
That was Sean Flanagan. You also heard from Troy Trevor, both Queensland rural agents who have taken up the mantle. as the co-conveners and principal auctioneers for the Big Country Brahmin sale. Now, back in 1994, Jim Ganey and Ken McCaffrey were the founders of the sale. I had a chat to Ken McCaffrey about giving up the mantle and passing on the gavel to the new guard in his final Big Country sale, where he acted as a consultant.
We've been with this sale since it started in 1994, so it's 28 years old this year, so I've got mixed feelings, you know. There's certainly a bit of emotion involved, there's no doubt about that, because there's plenty of Jim and I, you know, plenty of our hearts in this sale, you know, because it's principally the biggest agent-run sale in Australia, the Big Country Brahmin sale. There are no sale bigger than this run by agents. So, you know, something we've been proud of, the development of it over the years. But the time comes, Tom. You know, you get older, and you know, you've got to pick a good time to hand the sale on, and be assured that it's going to keep getting better and going ahead stronger. And that's the success I look for, is to build something to a point, and when it's better off passed on, pass the baton on. Well, that's the time to do it, you know.
Having that foot in the camp of the commercial breeders and also the stud industry, what's the importance of that, I guess, in putting together a show like this?
Well, it's extremely important to us, you know, because from the early days, I feel Northern Australian cattlemen, Northern Queensland cattlemen, have felt an ownership of this sale. You know, it was a bold move when we started the sale. People said, "I fancy doing that, it's not going to work," you know. And so it was a bold move, and conditions, the yardings here were pretty ordinary. They were only selling sort of monthly cattle sales at that stage. And we set out to bring, you know, better genetics to the north and offer them on the doorstep of the northern industry. And that's been very much appreciated by cattle producers from near and far in the north here. The sale has been a leader in innovating things. Things like the online bidding here, you know, it was the first time ever in Australia it was done here at Big Country, and plenty of other things.
That's Ken McCaffrey speaking to Tom Major there at the Big Country Brahmin sale that is wrapped up in Charters Towers. First major bull sale of the year. They always say, if you want to get a sense on how confident the cattle industry is, head along to a bull sale. And sure enough, cattle industry feeling very confident at the moment, and the top price bull there at Charters Towers, $130,000.
Hi, Heather Ewart here. Join me for a brand new season of Backroads as we travel to the more remote towns and regions of Australia. From Cobar to Cloncurry, Strawn to Cooper Pedy, and many more in between. We discover all that magnificent rural and regional Australia has to offer, and celebrate the amazing people living life just off the back roads of Australia.
All new Backroads, Thursday night at 8 on ABC TV and streaming on iView.
Time now on the Country Hour to head to the sale yards with all the latest prices out of Dublin, South Australia. Here's John Traeger.
Good afternoon. Numbers remain similar as agents offer 235 head to the usual buying group, along with restockers and feeders seeking supply. Medium weight yearling steers sold from 340 to 440 cents, as heavyweights made 392 to 452 cents. Light and medium weight yearling heifers sold from 320 to a top of 430 cents, as the few heavyweights made 370 to 444 cents. Grown steers sold from 350 to 415 cents, with grown heifers selling from 340 to 366 cents. Medium and heavyweight cows sold from 250 to a top of 305 cents. Light bulls sold from 250 to 400 cents, as bull to processors sold from 220 to a top of 350 cents a kilo. This is John Traeger of the South Australian Livestock Exchange for MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service and the Country Hour.
Thank you very much for that, John. And in the live export trade, and it was our top story today, prices are on the rise. Feeder steers to Indonesia are fetching around $4.10 a kilo, although we heard from an agent today who said that he's starting to lock in cattle between $4.20 and up to $4.30 a kilogram for feeder steers to Indonesia. The heifers getting $4 a kilo. These are unheard of prices in the live cattle trade. The market is hot. When will it come off the boil? Only time will tell. There's a lot of analysts, though, predicting that a major market correction is not too far away. But for right now, if you've got cattle and grass and can get those steers up to Darwin, there is some big money to be made. That's it for today's show. Keep it rural.